Breakfast at Sally's, written by Richard Lemieux. Chapter 15. David's Song. My attention turned to the activity at Sally's. The local citizens were beginning to gather for the parade, carrying their lawn chairs, dragging their coolers on wheels past the breakfast line. A pickup truck, towing a green and white float decorated with shamrocks, made a wide turn from Warren Avenue to 6th. 4-H builds character, was written on its side. Hillbilly and Ogre came strolling up the alley and got in line behind me just as the door to Sally swung open. C was right behind them, tossing bread to the crows and pigeons on his way. C had his sea bag tied around his shoulder. The crows were crying out in a marvelous chorus as C reached into the bag and broke each slice into generous pieces, tossing some left and some right. Then he shook the crumbs from the Wonder Bread bag onto the ground, put the bag in his pocket, and walked toward us, smiling. I stepped behind Hillbilly and Ogre and put my hand out to C. "Richard," C's smile warmed me, "it's good to see you." He reached out to shake my hand. "Where have you been?" "Boy, have I got a story for you," I replied as the line began to move. "I got saved in Gig Harbor." While the line crawled along, I told C the tale of Pastor Bob and our car trip, informed him that horoscopes are the work of the devil, and let him know I had been saved in a little white church. C laughed as I relayed the details of that incident. The hands on me, Pastor Bob's wife crying out, "Oh, God!" Jim dancing over me, the woman chanting, "God, help him! Help him!" Hillbilly and Ogre were chortling and shaking their heads. They couldn't help overhearing the story. "He was lucky to get out of there with all his body parts, right, Ogre?" C said. "Damn right, C." "Ogre didn't lose half his arm in Nam like some people think," C said. "Right, Ogre?" Ogre nodded. "Do you mind telling Richard how you lost it?" As his name implied, Ogre was not a good-looking man. It appeared his nose had been broken more than once, and part of his right ear was missing. "I got saved too, Richard," he said, 4 or 5 years ago, after I got arrested for breaking and entering. "But I went crazy with that Jesus stuff. The pastor said, 'It's in the Bible. If your eye offends thee, pluck it out.' Well, my offender was my arm. I stole with it. So one night, I got drunk and cut that arm off with a bandsaw." I didn't know what to say. Fortunately, the line picked up speed as Hillbilly and Ogre rounded the corner and into the confines of Sally's they went. "I guess some people carry that being saved a little too far," I whispered to C. "Ogre sure did," C said. "He's a good guy. His real name is Paul. But he likes to be called Ogre now. He's gotten used to it." The line moved forward and we stepped inside. The Salvation Army major was making an announcement on the microphone. "There is a parade for Memorial Day today at 10 a.m., and you are welcome to stay here and watch it with us from the side of the building. I know there are a lot of Vietnam vets here today, and we are going to have a special church service here on Sunday to honor those who served in all the wars." Then the major put the microphone down on the table and got into the food line behind us. "Hello, C," he said, "and you too, Richard."
"Something smells good," C said.
"Chef Pat's made biscuits and gravy," the major replied. "They're always pretty good." The line moved forward again, and we were at the serving window. I picked up my tray and held it out. The server took a piece of Wonder Bread and placed it on my tray and then piled on a heavy portion of sausage gravy. "We ran out of biscuits," he said, "but you can put Pat's gravy on just about anything and it will be pretty good." I nodded my thanks and got a cup of coffee before heading for the table at the back of the room. C and the major did the same, and just as we were sitting down, we heard a clunk and then a screech emanating from the loudspeaker system. Lily, a diminutive Native American, had the microphone in her hand. "Oops," said the major. "I should have put that away."
"I have a song I want to sing,"
Lily slurred as she rocked back and forth.
Lily was about 4 feet tall and about 50 years old. She wore black jeans and a stained black sweatshirt this morning, and she was obviously intoxicated.
"It's called David's Dance," she said.
She paused a moment, and then she began to sing.
"When the Spirit of the Lord moves in my heart, I will dance like David danced."
Lily sang off-key and attempted to dance, or at least sway, from one foot to the other, but she nearly fell to the floor. She repeated the line, slurring some of the words and looking at the floor.
When she tried, "I will sing like David sang,"
7 or 8 people shoved the last spoonfuls of their grub, deposited their trays in the washtub, and escaped quickly out the door. Others just laughed as Lily continued,
"I will sing, I will sing, I will sing like David sang."
Lily stumbled and almost fell down again. She tried to continue, but when she saw how many people were laughing at her, she put the microphone down. The major jumped from his chair and quickly retrieved the microphone from the table. "Thank you, Lily, for your song," he said, heading for the office with the valuable equipment. Lily then saw C and leaned forward, squinting to bring him into focus. "C, C, C," she said, and with unsteady steps she made her way between the tables to a spot where we were sitting. She sort of fell into the seat the major had vacated. "C," she said, leaning towards him,
"I am in need. You gotta help a girl out."
She gave him a pleading, if not quite focused, look. "This must be that terrible tiger Lily," C said, leaning back and holding his hands to form a cross with the two fingers. "Oh, no," he said. "It's the terrible one, not the sweet little Lily everyone loves. It's the evil twin."
"Come on, C," she lowered her voice. "You know what I need. I need some weed. Something to get me through. Give me some."
"I don't have any right now," C replied.
"Oh, come on. You always do," she slurred. "I don't. I really don't," was his reply.
Lily became quiet. She slowly got up, steadied herself on the edge of the round table, and walked away without a word.
"Poor Lily," C said. "Too much fire water."
He picked up his sea bag and his tray. He was obviously ready to move on. I picked up my tray and followed. "I've got to tell you the rest of the story about the trailer I stayed in and the two women I met. You won't believe it." We walked toward the door and C nodded his encouragement.
"Well, I thought I had this place to stay," I began. "The woman told me I could stay there for free, but it didn't take long before..."
I stopped in mid-sentence when we pushed the big door open and found Lily lying in the grass.
"Oh, Lily," C said. "Are you okay?"
He got down on one knee and touched her face.
Lily opened her eyes. "Just resting," she said, looking up at C.
"Come on, Richard," C said. "Help me get her up. Maybe we could take her home. She only lives a couple of blocks from here." I bent down to help Lily to her feet. She weighed in at maybe 90 pounds. We guided her to the van and got her into the front seat. Willow went right to work, licking her face and bringing Lily's spirit back to life. C got into the back seat. Willow licked Lily's mouth, nose, and ears, and she chuckled at the attention. It was only 3 blocks to Lily's apartment, which was located directly across from the Navy shipyard. Hers was a run-down, 1-story stucco building, currently painted white, but you could tell from the flaking on the side that it had once been blue, once yellow, and once green. We rolled to a stop.
"Okay, Lily, we got you home safe," C said from the back seat.
He stepped out and opened the door for Lily. Lily had recovered somewhat.
"I'm not getting out till you give me some weed," she slurred,
and she crossed her arms defiantly across her chest. C laughed.
"Oh, come on, Lily. We did you a big favor bringing you home. The cops would have scraped you up and taken you to detox." "I ain't moving," Lily spat back.
"I told you I don't have any,"
C said. Well, then give me a dollar, Lily said.
We don't have any money either, C replied.
You got 50 cents? Lily asked, turning her head to me. I'll get out for 50 cents.
I looked out on the crowd that was lining the parade route. They had become intrigued by our theatrical performance. How am I going to get this drunken woman out of my car? I wondered. I dug into my pocket and pulled out my last quarter and held it up to Lily.
I've got a quarter, I said. That's all I got.
Lily thought for a moment and then reached out and took the quarter from my hand without a word. She slid off the seat, stumbling again, but C caught her arm and held her up. Still silent, Lily headed for her apartment door. C began to scoot into the seat, but stopped. He looked at me, then back at Lily.
This isn't right, he said. You doing anything for the next couple of hours?
Not really, I had to admit.
Then let's not leave the lady alone right now.
He stuck his head up above the van and called out to Lily. Lily, you want some company for a bit? Lily didn't even turn her head, but raised her hand high to wave us in. She opened the door and walked in, leaving the door ajar for us. C got out of the van and headed for Lily's apartment. I pulled the van into a parking spot, picked Willow up in my arms, and went inside.
I hope it's okay that I brought my dog in, I said to Lily, who had thrown herself down on a sofa.
Okay,
Lily mumbled. I found a seat in a comfortable easy chair beside the sofa. C began making himself at home, just as he always did. He walked into the small kitchen off the living room and opened the refrigerator door, bent forward to peer in, and then closed the door.
We need some music, he said, looking around the apartment.
Aha, he said, spying a radio sitting on a side table. He walked over and turned it on.
Hurry on down to Cal's, the announcer was saying. We're open till 9 tonight, and we have the car for you with no money down.
Then the DJ took over. We're back with the top 100 of all time. Here's Oh, 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 It's Magic. And then the song began to play. C walked over to the table by the window, covered with plants. He stuck his finger in the dirt.
Lily, your plants need water.
This seemed to concern Lily, and she began to get up, but appeared to feel dizzy and plopped back down.
C, would you give him water? She asked. Not tap water, water from that plastic bottle in the kitchen. I collect rainwater for them.
While C was watering the plants, I scoped out Lily's apartment. A small wooden dining table was covered with a pretty print cloth, and it was set for four, with brightly colored plates, cups, and saucers, and silverware placed appropriately on cloth napkins. Two small windows were covered in homemade beaded curtains of silver and turquoise. The sofa Lily was lying on was covered with a beautiful red, white, and blue Native American blanket. The wall behind the sofa contained framed family photos. There was a picture of a man in a brown army uniform and cap. He was an older man. I got up and went closer. There was a photo of a younger man, also in an army uniform. Next to that picture was a black and white photo of a Native American man with a long feathered headdress. The song had ended on the radio, and another commercial came on. This Memorial Day is the perfect time to buy your loved one a place in the heavens with National Star Registry, the announcer proclaimed. For only $19.99, you can have a star named after your wife or husband and will be sent a certificate of authenticity. It seemed bizarre that there were now stars in the sky named Becky, Barbie, and Randy. We're back, the DJ's perky voice resumed. Here's Etta James and Standing on Shaky Ground. Lily had roused and was on the move. She stumbled toward C and nearly fell to the floor. C reached out and caught her. Lily then nuzzled up against C, wrapped her arm around his neck, and pulled his head down so she could whisper in his ear. It seemed Lily was offering C a little feminine touch for a pinch of his bud. C smiled as he gently pulled away from Lily.
Oh, madame,
I would be one lucky man to taste the nectar of your kiss and to know your charms, but I am not worthy of even a small embrace from a lady of your stature. Alas, my lass, I have noticed the fragrance of vomit on your breath. Lily abruptly pulled away from C in a huff. But I do have with me the elixir to cure what ails thee, C added, as Lily reached the wooden chair in the dining room and threw herself down in disgust. She took the back of her hand and rubbed it roughly across her mouth. C dove into his sea bag and pulled out a plastic Fanta bottle filled with a caramel-colored substance. "It's called Adam's Tree Bark Tea," C exclaimed as he held up the bottle. "It cures everything. Drives out evil spirits, grows hair on bald spots, wipes out fungus, improves concentration, and relieves constipation."
"My grandfather used to make that back in South Dakota," Lily said. "Tree bark tea. I haven't had it in 40 years. Where'd you get it?"
"Oh, I can't reveal that," C said. "A secret location. We have passwords and everything just to get in."
"You're full of crap, C," Lily retorted. "I'm going to take a shower. I need it bad."
She stood up slowly and used a hand to brace herself. "That's an understatement," C noted wryly.
"There's a pot in the kitchen, so make us some tea," Lily said as she headed to the bathroom, finally resigned to the fact that C was not going to provide the stimulant she longed for.
C took his bottle to the kitchen, and I heard him rattling through pots and pans, looking for an appropriate one in which to heat the tree bark tea. Lily had closed the door to her tiny bathroom, but even with the door closed and the strains of My Girl coming from the radio, it was easy to hear her throwing up.
"Lily is worshipping the porcelain god," C said, laughing. "Hey, Richard, come look at this."
I went into the kitchen. C was running some hot water into the sink and pouring detergent onto a pile of dishes. He stopped, put down the soap container, and quickly dried his hands.
"Would you take these out to the recycling bin?"
he asked, pointing to 3 empty Smirnoff bottles.
"It's right out front."
"Okay," I said, as he handed me the empties. I headed for the door.
"Wait, let's get rid of this one, too."
He opened the refrigerator and removed another bottle.
"There's one last swig in it," he said,
twisting off the cap and downing the contents. "Looks like she's been drinking for quite a few days." C handed me the bottle, and I headed for the door again. Outside, the parking lot was now full of people sitting on their ice chests and looking relaxed in their lawn chairs. I received a few smiles as I headed for the bin, loaded down with empty vodka bottles. I dropped them in the bin and quickly headed back. I could hear the shower running through the thin walls.
"So you know, Lily?" I asked C, as he was washing the dishes.
"Oh, not very well," C replied. "I've bumped into her around town. She thinks I sell weed, which I don't," he continued. "I only use it for my bad back, which hurts a lot from all the crosses I bear in life. It's purely medicinal," and he laughed. "I've seen her intoxicated a lot, usually alone, walking the streets," he continued. "And I've run into her at Sally's and a few other places where she's been charming, polite, and quite the conversationalist." I walked back into the living room to check on Willow. She had curled up for a nap, with one eye open to survey the human activities. But Willow's nap was short-lived.
"Aye!"
The sound of a fire truck siren filled the room. Then, "Room! Room!" Motorcycles revved their engines, and a band played Sousa's Stars and Stripes Forever. First the piccolos, then the trombones, the drums, and finally the full band. The parade had begun. I pulled back one of Lily's delicate curtains to view the tuba players puffing on the instruments and strutting by. The band was followed by a red Mustang convertible and a Marine sitting atop the back seat, wearing his dress uniform, white pants, blue coat with brass buttons, and a dress cap. He was waving at the crowd. Next, a white convertible came into view, a new Cadillac with a sign on the side. "Congressman Norm Dick supports our troops." The congressman, dressed in a blue suit,
white shirt, and red tie was smiling and waving at the crowd as well. Then, like a small earthquake, the walls began to shake and a roar from above filled the room. The crowd outside cheered and looked to the sky as a jet plane came in low and fast over the city. Two of Lily's pictures fell off the wall, and Willow got spooked and ran to sit at my feet.
"Flying low, wasn't he?" C yelled from the kitchen.
"Wow," I said.
"It's okay, girl," I assured Willow, who hopped back onto the sofa.
Lily opened the bathroom door, a large towel wrapped around her small body and another around her head. "That feels a lot better," she said, as she walked barefoot into her bedroom and shut the door.
Drums could be heard again outside. I peeked out to see six drummers pounding in unison. The drum major, in his navy whites, blew his whistle sharply three times and then spun around to face the rest of the band. Lifting his shiny baton high, he blew his whistle again and then turned smartly forward as the band began to play.
C broke into song in the kitchen in his off-key, crackly voice, "Anchors away, my boys, anchors away."
He came singing and prancing into the living room with a long toilet brush he must have found under the sink. I couldn't resist joining in his parade around the living room, holding my hands to my mouth and making a squeaky sound like I was playing a flute.
C lifted his brush high, then low, stopped for a second, and then paraded again.
"Hey!"
Lily called out, and we froze in our tracks, not only at her voice, but also at her appearance. She had put on a beautiful white dress, trimmed with multicolored beads and a pair of white moccasins. Her jet-black hair was still wet. She held a brush in her hand and brought it to her hair. She looked beautiful.
"That's my toilet brush, C, in the living room."
Lily sounded quite indignant. The sound of the band began to fade away, but the radio was still blaring. Buffalo Springfield was singing, "There's something happening here."
"I can't stand all this noise,"
Lily said, turning off the radio.
"The tea is ready," C said, heading for the kitchen.
Lily noticed the two pictures that had fallen off the wall and went over to them.
"Good, the glass didn't break," she said,
picking them off the floor and carrying them to the table. She sat down gracefully. I joined her at the table, and C came in carrying two cups of steaming tea bark tea. He gave one to Lily and one to me, and returned to get a cup for himself.
"You look nice in that dress," he said as he returned.
"Thank you, C,"
Lily responded demurely. She carefully picked up one of the pictures she had retrieved from the floor.
"Who is that, Lily?"
I asked.
"That's my father," she said. "Isn't he a handsome man?"
"He is," I replied.
"He's Cherokee," said Lily. "That's another picture of him on the wall, the old one with the headdress. I hardly knew my dad. My mother gave me this picture before she died 4 years ago. His name was Charles. They liked to call him Charlie. He died in the Korean War when I was a child."
"And that one?" I asked, nodding at the other picture.
"My brother. Isn't he beautiful?"
she asked, turning the frame to us.
We nodded. "He took care of me when I was little, always watching over me."
She smiled, gazing at the picture.
"Where is he now?" C asked.
"He died too," Lily said. "He joined the army like my dad and was killed in Vietnam. They wanted to be warriors. David wanted to be a warrior like his dad."
She clutched the picture to her bosom. Tears began to form in her eyes.
"David was killed on Memorial Day."
The parade was still passing by outside, but it seemed quite still in the apartment.
"War has got all it's going to get from my family,"
Lily said, reaching for her tea and taking a sip.
"So that's why you were singing David's song this morning?"
C said.
"Yes, in his honor,"
Lily replied.
"But I was kind of drunk."
"Well, could you sing it now?" C asked.
"Now?"
Lily was incredulous at the suggestion.
"Why not?" C asked.
I guess," she said.
She began to sing very softly.
"When the Spirit of the Lord moves in my heart, I will sing like David sang. When the Spirit of the Lord moves in my heart, I will sing like David sang."
She raised her voice and continued,
"I will sing, I will sing, I will sing like David sang. I will sing, I will sing, I will sing like David sang."
Comfortable with this now, Lily stood up, stepped back from the table, and said,
"Sing with me." "When the Spirit of the Lord moves in my heart, I will dance like David danced."
As she sang, she began to sway from one foot to the other. We began to sing along.
"When the Spirit of the Lord moves in my heart, I will dance like David danced. I will dance, I will dance like David danced. I will dance, I will dance, I will dance like David danced."
C and I applauded. Lily bowed and smiled and then sat down at the table. She reached for her cup and took a drink of her tea.
"You know, this is pretty good tea," she said.
"And you're a good dancer," C said. "And you're a good singer," I said to C.
"That's a lie, Richard,"
Lily said, and we all laughed. Lily took another sip of her tea and then set her cup down.
"The Indian Commissioner banned dancing by Cherokees in 1883.
She was reflective for several minutes. And so the afternoon continued. We stayed at Lily's the rest of the day. We all stuck our heads out of the windows to watch the rest of the parade. Boy Scouts, then Cub Scouts, then Girl Scouts, the 4-H float, 20 or more glittering baton twirlers, a line of antique cars, and a troop of sultry belly dancers, followed by half a dozen silver-saddled Palomino horses. Later, C found enough money in the bottom of his sea bag to send me to the store for the makings of chicken and dumplings, which we prepared. After dinner, Lily told us all she knew about her family as we played a few hands of her favorite game, Rummy 500. Lily said we could sleep over if we wished, but we would have to be quiet. No parades and stuff. I curled up on the sofa with Willow and closed my eyes. C was chuckling from the easy chair as he watched The Simpsons. As I readied myself for sleep and what I hoped would be good dreams, I replayed my mental tape of the day. My friend C had shown me a new window to look through, pushed me through a door I would never have entered, and sang with me a song I would never have sung. David's song would have just been another set of lyrics to me. But when C bent down to help Lily get off the ground in front of Sally's, I had to bend down with him. If I had been by myself, I would have just stepped over her, and I would have been the loser. At this point, we must break off our reading. You've been hearing Breakfast at Sally's by Richard Lemieux. Copyright 2009. It is read with the permission of Skyhorse Publishing of New York. Join us next time on The Bookshelf for Breakfast at Sally's. The Bookshelf is produced and edited by Vern Windham. I'm Jeff Hazen.